Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 9th, 2012, and for some reason, I think there's a somewhat of a buzzing noise in my equipment. I don't really know where it's coming from, but there, if you hear a little buzzing noise, I'll try and cure that by before next week's show. Okay, at any rate, there's a song that Ray Charles made famous. It's called "A Rainy Night in Georgia." Must be raining all over the world is one of the lines in that song. And it's really true. It's raining all over the world, except if you live in some of the northern states, it's been virtually dry. So this song might not apply to you. Ray Charles, "A Rainy Night in Georgia." Must be raining all over the world. And the point of this is that weather patterns around the world are really, really bizarre. The sailors of old would have had a tough time today because they depended on trade winds, winds that were regular. They went in regular patterns and around the world, and so they followed these. Their charts would lead them from one place to the other, and the old square rig sailing ships, the big galleys, and etc. Those ships depended on trade winds. Well, they would have a very tough time now. The weather, for example, up in the northeastern states is coming from south, basically from Florida. The wind patterns are swooping way down in the Atlantic, far south. This is driving the typical, this time of year, the February, the rain patterns would typically be coming into somewhat the Caribbean, and right now they're being driven south, so it's raining all over South America. There's no water that's coming up from Florida into the northeast states, so it's virtually dry up there. The Pacific winds in this time of year typically pick up moisture, bring it up to the Arctic Circle around Alaska, and then it swings easterly and drops down over Canada into the northern states, brings cold weather and moisture. Some of that moisture does come up from the south and mixes with the cold air to cause snow, and then that tends to move easterly out to the eastern states. Well, none of this is happening now. If you look at the Pacific wind patterns, the overall major wind patterns, they come up the west coast of the United States and then Canada. They swing west out into the strait between Alaska and Russia, and then move westerly. Everything is topsy-turvy, upside down, and backwards when it comes to weather wind patterns. So I really don't know what to tell you on this one, all other than the things are, it's almost like the politics of the world really messed up. On February 3rd, which was last Friday, there was a non-Earth-directed solar flare, a pretty good pop from the sun. I was looking for comets that could have caused that, but not all solar flaring is caused by comets. It's just always interesting to see the ones that are and that really correspond. You can see the actual interaction of the comet with the sun, like a spark plug activity between the comet and the sun, and of course standard science ignores that, says it's only a coincidence. And how many times can they say something is coincidence? Hundreds of times these have happened, and every time it happens they treat it as if it were the first and only time. But that's standard science. They can ignore things, change things, sweep data under the rug, and it doesn't matter. Just a quick note on the items on my sales web sales page on my web page. By the way, the web page is JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, JMCCSCI.com, short for JMcCannyScience.com. But too many people used to misspell that. And so now I just have the abbreviated version, seven letters, jmccsci.com. The J. McCanney Science web designation is still there. It's just that it's easier to get to with just the seven letters. But here is my point. A lot of times I talk about the, by the way, there's a sale going on. It's 2-for-1 for my books right now. Any book, DVD, or CD, or any combination, any of the packages on the page are 2-for-1. And I appreciate people responding to that. I put on a 2-for-1 sale a couple weeks ago because I had just finished printing the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, and the Calculate Primes book. Three of my books just came out of reprints. And so anyways, the cost of printing, and of course I do all this myself, so I put a 2-for-1 sale. Also, if you purchase anything over $400, including water filter items, then you get a free Kato WRX 911 radio. It's about a $20 radio, but really, really a good radio. And so it's an AM, FM, and shortwave. It's excellent on shortwave. And if you, this is for any shortwave radio, but especially for these little ones, if you use headsets, a headset, you'll get much better reception. And also, if you use one of the amplification headsets, you will get extremely good reception on these little radios. You'll hear things that you, without it, you can't even hear the band or the station. And with it, you'll pick up stations all over the world very clearly. But anyway, I wanted to make mention of things on my webpage in the following regard. Everything on my webpage is selling. There's not one thing that's sitting there and not selling very many of them. I have the books, the six books. I have my DVDs, the CDs. Then I have my own water filter products. Then I have they're still selling the Dalton water filter products. Some people still want to order those even though the cost has gone up considerably. But everything, including my first books and everything, are selling today. Some people write books, and so they'll write a book and okay, that sells good. So then they got to write another book. And then that they promote that, and that sells good for a while. And then they write another book, and their first books kind of taper off, and they really don't sell many anymore. So they keep having to write books. My books aren't like that. The Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, which is my first book, over 10 years old, is still selling like the first day it came out in the press. People really appreciate this information. Okay, so at any rate, without going into a lot of detail, go to the sales page, go to my web page, go to the sales page, and just look at all of those items. I should mention, too, that I for a while had sold flax. I don't do that anymore because it's not that the product wasn't excellent. I certainly wish I could sell flax again. But the shipping was just horrendous, trying to ship the flax, it's very heavy, and trying to ship that around the country to various locations, it was just very hard to keep track of shipping costs and charge it appropriately up front. So that's why I stopped selling the flax. And then also the freeze-dried food, I have pulled it off the webpage. It's just available in a lot of places. So what you'll find on my webpage are things that you cannot really find anyplace else. And I want to mention, people have brought this up many times, don't buy my books from any other source, like used books on Amazon. I don't trust any of them. I've seen some, there were people at one point we had to stop. They were trying to print my books and then possibly change them, but print them in basically illegally. Print my books and sell them. So anyway, the only source, the simplified version of this, the only source for my books is on my webpage. I don't sell them through anybody else. I should qualify that. Pastor Peter's Scriptures for America they do sell some of my books, and they're the only people on the planet that have my permission to sell my books. And it's just because those are great people over there, and they wanted to sell my books because the people called them up, their particular audience. So, but other than that, my webpage is the only place to buy my books, CDs, DVDs, etc. And for sure, if you ever bought a Calculate Prime used, the DVD cannot be duplicated or resold, so they sell them without the DVD, like on Amazon. And that's really bad because the DVD is such an important part of that book. It's like 50% of the information is on the DVD. So the bottom line is only buy my books from my website. Okay, on to the next topic. There is a lot of posturing and positioning going on in the world today. Radio shows are, there's a lot of information coming out to you about this posturing in the world. Syria has Russian troops moving in from the north. The U.S., the CIA is over there obviously stirring up a lot of trouble so that the U.S. troops can move in. Iran has Russian troops now in it. The U.S. is positioning itself offshore and getting ready. It's, from what I've told, America has already crossed into Iran in certain border positions. This baby is heating up over there. This looks like World War III coming down the pike here. And so all I can tell you is that none of these seem to be backing off, but I want to give my own interpretation of what's going on. The people in charge of the world, so to speak, I believe want a major conflict. I think they want to see the U.S. Army and Navy, especially, and Air Force go down in a ball of flames because they cannot be in the position of world power with the United States having a powerful army. Okay, so at any rate, I think that this is all marionettes, the bad guys and the good guys, and this is being orchestrated for a big final powwow here coming up in a couple of months. Somebody told me they heard on a radio show that the news media was setting up cameras on rooftops in Israel. In other words, expecting an attack on Israel. And of course, that's the key to letting this whole thing break wide open over there. The United States has put a lot of posturing statements out, and so anyway, who knows, but all I can tell you is that around May this year, and then that's very interesting because of all of the 2012 hype, which much of it has been simply misdirected, just bizarre things, the Mayan calendar and all of that really has nothing to do with 2012. The Nostradamus or the crossing the galactic plane, all of this just garbage information concentrating on 2012. But it seems to be one of those things where a lot of times we've seen movies come out that predate events like 9/11 or other international events. It's like people want to tell you that something's going to happen just to play with the public. But at any rate, it's very interesting to see England having problems down in the Falkland Islands. What an interesting place to have problems at this time of year, so to speak, or in, you know, given the history of that of the islands down there, that this is all going on right now. In light of this, I wanted to make a statement. And in the past, many people have said, I've heard this stated on radio shows, I've heard talk show hosts talk about this, that our own military would not turn and fire, that is, shoot with live fire, on our public, so they have to bring in foreign troops. And that has always been the rationale for, oh, we're going to have foreign troops here, and they're going to be on every street corner, things like that. But there's a two-edged sword to that, a two-edged sword in that those foreign troops don't have any allegiance to the politicians. So if you bring in foreign troops, you better have a way to control those foreign troops so they don't turn on the government, which is very susceptible. And you could have two groups going after the government, the local people, and the insurgent army. So I've always said that if they do bring, if you do see Chinese or other armies on the street corners with machine guns, those people won't be here long. They will have a poison in them where they simply won't last very long. So it'll be 1 or 2 weeks. The purpose would be simply to maintain crowds for a short period of time. And then those insurgent armies, the armies that were invited in for control, would simply die off very quickly. They wouldn't have any support. They wouldn't have any food. They wouldn't have any medical supplies. They would be just put out there for a short period of time. And this is almost biblical in structure. But the point I want to make is that it's been stated that the reason for this is that our own troops would not turn and fire on our own public. I want to disagree with that. I want to go on the air and say, I don't think so. I believe that our own troops not only would fire on our own people, they would follow commands and do that, and it would be supported by a large percentage of the population. The American public is one of the dumbest groups of people on the planet, and that's why the politicians and the New World Order people can get away with everything they are doing, including taking over third world countries economically, politically, and destroying the lives of billions of people around the world with really no recourse. And this is because the American public is so stupid, they don't have any idea what's going on this planet, who controls things. And so, as I said, not only would our own military turn and fire on our own public and probably feel good about it, go home and have a cup of coffee, but it would also be supported by the public. And I can just see this news item coming on the evening news. American troops had to fire on crowds in Los Angeles or some other major city, and because the terrorists in that city were rampaging in the streets, whereas they're calling terrorists the people that live there. So I can just see this happening, and a lot of the people going, yeah, it's good that they shot all those people in Los Angeles. So at any rate, that's my commentary on that. I'm going to leave that. And what does this have to do with science? Well, actually, it has quite a bit to do with science, because the timing, I've always said, when natural events, major natural events, like a outer space type of event, if they're at hand, then you're going to see these political maneuvering, military maneuvering, fascism going through the ceiling. You're going to see all of this, and we are seeing it right now, and it seems to be culminating this spring of 2012. Not to mention all of the hype about 2012. So when they're talking about December 2012, I would consider us lucky if we see December of 2012 and this whole thing doesn't come crashing down and burning before them. Just a quick note also, I saw a thing where Congress was going to vote to get rid of the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration, that likes to play with little old ladies in airports or whatever, and also obviously a political arm of the government to stop certain people from traveling, etc. But the Congress was going to vote to dismantle the TSA. But gee, I wonder if we're going to have a little event here showing how valuable the TSA is, a planned event. Oh, we can't dismantle the TSA. Look, they saved the world the other day in then some planned event. I can just see that happening because that's a big element of control. Control the population while they're traveling. Okay, so at any rate, let me look at some of my notes here. Ron Paul came in second in Minnesota. Interesting that, of course, the news media downplays this. They say that he has never won a primary. And, they're throwing out the Iowa primary as being totally fixed. I heard a story where an observer from Illinois crossed over into Iowa to observe some of the ballot counting locations. And one of them that was especially strong for Ron Paul, the lights went out while they were counting. And, isn't that interesting? All kinds of things happened that would be very suspicious. You just don't have those kind of power outages in the United States, third world country. You might expect that. But while they were counting the votes, the lights went out. I wonder what happened to piles of votes when that happened. I'm just going to make a comment on communications. I've talked many times about the communications mafia, the telecommunications corporations like Sprint and AT&T and T-Mobile and Verizon, etc. These companies are making an absolute fortune off of charging for communications. The original idea of Ma Bell and AT&T was that these were utilities. They were established and the pricing was controlled by government utility agencies to control the price so that the companies, these utilities, weren't to make a profit. They were never meant to make a profit. It was kind of like insurance. They've just gotten way out of whack with reality. But it's my opinion that just like the highway system was built for transportation and commerce, there should be a communication system that is free. And there should not be a company in the middle making a lot of money off of this. So my comment is that communications, the highways of communication, just like the highways that were built for transportation, for commerce to flow freely amongst this around this country, they should be simply free communications. And so I'm a big proponent of the idea that everybody should simply have an internet connection. You can talk over the internet, you can do video, you can, thank goodness for companies like Skype, etc. But you see that as soon as those companies become successful and people start using them, somebody comes in and purchases them, and I think we're going to see the face of free internet communication go asunder because companies can move in and do it for profit and force the independent free companies, the ones that provide you with very good service for very little money, because it's cutting too deeply into the communications mafia profits. Just like a free access to outer space. NASA's charter should have been very simple. Provide a free access to outer space, a highway to the planetary system and then eventually to the stars. But you see, for example, recently NASA gave out contracts for an electric propulsion system. This would be solar-powered, basically ion engines, a tug that would move objects from low Earth orbit out into interplanetary space away from Earth. But this is all going to big corporations and the contracts, etc. But the idea is to maintain that government monopoly of outer space and to maintain the public away from outer space. I always like to use the example of surfing. If there were some commercial aspect to surfing other than just riding a wave and having a good time, the government would want in to go in and control it. Every time you rode a wave, you'd have to pay a tax. But people got out there, and it was one of those things that developed as kind of like a sport, kind of like rollerblading or skating or other types of sports. But the outer space should be very much like surfing. This should be something that you should just be able to do, go out there for fun, for travel. But no matter what it is, remember the travel used to be to take a vacation, to go someplace, or businessmen to go have a meeting. It wasn't meant to be something bizarre as it is today. You go into an airport, you have to stand in line and be inspected like a piece of cattle so that you can get on an airplane. It makes it, in a lot of cases, more advantageous to take ground transportation. Why don't they do this for ground transportation? You would think that most terrorists would be better off taking ground transportation than airplanes. What's so special about airplanes? Well, that is the traveling public. That's the freedom of moving for long distances, etc. So, once again, communications, transportation, travel, all should be free. The pay highways that are going in all around the country right now, where foreign subsidiaries of foreign companies own the rights to highways in the United States, and you have to pay to be there. I think I talked about this on the show when I was out in Colorado last summer. I'm driving around, and all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, I get something in the mail that I owe somebody $5. And there's no meter, there's no toll booth. Oh, no, you were e-ticketed, and you owe this money. And if you ever go back to Colorado, your license plate is being examined by cameras that are all over the highway system, and in 2 minutes you would have a Colorado highway patrolman on your tail arresting you and bringing you in for not paying your $5 fine. But, of course, at that point, it would be a much bigger fine, and you would be paying a lot more money. So at any rate, yeah, travel, communications, transportation, these, and especially communications, should be a free highway. It's important for people to communicate. It's like a horse in the Old West. Okay, enough of that. There was an interesting comment that came in on Ron Paul, and said that he would be winning by a lot more if so many people did not depend on the government for jobs. As the economy tightens up, as private companies move offshore and take their business away, as the economy spirals down, one of the last bastions of employment is the government at local, state, and federal levels. And, of course, there have been surges of employment at a very low level for security-type positions in the government. So, at any rate, none of these people would vote for Ron Paul because they think that their job would be at stake. I've often talked about the Congress proof of NASA. Congress proof, it's a concept that was developed and very subtly sold, in that small companies all over the country should get a cut of NASA business. And in a lot of cases, they're not making anything really useful, or it's extremely useful. They're little projects, but in every congressional constituency, in every congressional region, there are small companies that get money from NASA for small contracts. What does this do? If the congressman or representative from that region voted against a NASA appropriation, they would be immediately singled out and publicity would be thrown around in that constituency, and this guy would never be elected again, and they all know it, so they all vote carte blanche for NASA funding, thinking that it's really great. But it's a way for NASA to have a monopoly in space by making sure that some people in every constituency get a piece of the NASA pie. It's just amazing how people will be led around, ring in the nose, so to speak, if you give them a little bit of government money. Works every time. Okay, I'm going to go into the show topics that I've picked for tonight. And I want to preface this by the fact that much of the science that's pawned off on the public today is very skillfully written so as to not include the whole story. How science lies to you every day. In a lie, remember when you would go into court or you'd see on TV a court case, they'd say, "Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" In other words, they want the truth, but in the case of science, they don't tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And they give a few what appear to be truthful factors, yet none of this really is truth. So what you're getting in science today is a hodgepodge of independent opinions of data, and so what the end result is that the fields of science really aren't in a looking. They're not looking at the real data and all the data. A lot of the data is swept under the rug. And here's a very great example. This is from DailyMail.co.uk. So this is a scientific science tech daily outlet. It says natural tilts Earth. In Earth's axis cause ice ages, a Harvard scientist says, and that would help predict the next one. The only problem is they're eliminating a lot of the known data. So let's look at this. The scientist is saying that the Earth has tilts in its axis, and this causes the ice age, and there are two cycles, he claims. One is a 40,000-year cycle, the other one is a 10,000-year cycle. And when these cycles align, then there is a depletion of glaciation. And when they're misaligned, then there's an augmentation in glaciation. Well, these kind of theories have been around for a long time. The only problem is they are promoting slow change in the geological record. And that's not the case. The whole point here is you have data points that are very important. Mastodons, woolly mammoths in Siberia that are frozen, standing up on all four legs, frozen to death with fresh tropical, semi-tropical flowers in their throats, undigested. This is not evidence of a slow 40 or 10,000 year cycle, but what happens is you get a young, sparkling, shiny new PhD that comes in, and of course, professor of Earth and planetary science that gives an opinion like this, and of course, this gets published. They also have to refer back to the concept that this idea is 100 years old, but now they're saying he has proven it. Well, let me see. How did he prove it? He did some computer calculations. I always love when people prove things with computer calculations. It doesn't prove anything. All it proves is that your computer program is designed to get the result that you want. The actual reality of glaciation on Earth is that in the last ice age, which we are coming out of now, the Laurentian ice shield did not extend into Siberia. It extended far down into North America, as far south as Nebraska. But at the time, Siberia was a very tropical, semi-tropical region. The woolly mammoths were a semi-tropical animal. They were not an Arctic animal. Their offspring eventually evolved to be some of the smaller animals that now occupy that area. But there was a mass extinction. The saber-toothed tiger, the woolly mammoth, the sloth, the giant sloth, all of these animals were very large animals, and they died off in a single event. There were woolly mammoths in South America. In a little while, I'll be talking about Antarctica once again.
The Russians have just drilled through in Lake Vostok. It appears they've drilled through the 2.5 mile ice dome that's above the lake. And by the way, the articles that I've seen are not very clear on this, so I want to say that the Lake Vostok has a dome, and so when you drill through that, you're still far from the surface of the lake. So at any rate, but back to this story that Harvard professor claims he's proven that there are cycles in the glaciation pattern of Earth. It simply doesn't show, it doesn't prove the data, doesn't account for the data. And you have, here's the problem, you have a young Tier 2 scientist who's been educated by Tier 2 older scientists, and the thing they want is to promote the concept that Earth has done this all by itself, and it's a natural cycle of Earth. It's kind of like the economy, too. They want to tell you that, oh, we're in a recession, and of course, we're right at the verge of recovery. No. Recessions are planned. A normal, healthy economy does not have recessions. It does not have depressions. These are planned events, they're cycled events, and they're meant to suck the wealth out of the economy. And then, of course, you need the slaves out there working again, so that you give them hope that, you know, they might get a job and they might work, and then they can build up a future again, and then you come along 10 years later and rob them again. So this has been going on for a long time. Well, it's the same way in science. Every now and then they have to revert back to these same old concepts that simply don't work. How is it that Siberia was a tropical climate in a northern latitude only a few degrees from the Arctic Circle? And on the other side of the globe in North America, the glacier extends down to Nebraska. It doesn't work, folks. So, but you have this smiling, bright, shiny new PhD who's going to make a computer calculation and publish it in a journal, and everything is fine. So this is what I'm talking about. This is skillfully not including the whole story, how science lies to you every day. Here's another story, and the reason I want to give these is, of course, you should know by now that what really happened is that Earth was jolted. We had a very heavy jolt of about, I would estimate, about 4,200 years ago, 3,500 to 4,200 years ago, a number of times by a large passing comet. And that comet eventually became the planet Venus. That comet probably came in as a family of comets associated with a much larger object, because the ancients talk about multiple big comets in the sky at the same time. But modern science wants to give you the image that none of this could happen, and that starts with astronomy, that wants to push the concept that nothing could happen outside of the world, nothing major. That's why they have to keep drumming on this comet Lovejoy, for example, a comet that went through the solar atmosphere, came out the other side. The nucleus of this comet was visible in the morning sky from observers from Earth. And before the sun came up, people actually were able to see the comet in the sky next to the sun, and NASA wants to tell you that it's 600 feet across, about 2 football fields, at a distance to the sun, next to the sun's light, and you're supposed to believe that this is a 600-foot-wide object. So absurd, that it boggles the imagination. But there are people who believe it. The other story I wanted to talk about, Mars came out last Friday, and I always like the way they release these the day after my show, so that they get a whole week of airtime on these articles before I get to come in and comment on them. But this next article I want to talk about, released February 3rd, is that Mars, a 600 million year drought, did it drive life underground? And so anyway, this is an article that, let me see where this one, I just want to give you the reference here. the Daily Galaxy this comes from, that trying to make a claim that scientists studying Mars' surface, that for a period of 5,000 years, some 600 million years ago, had a little bit of water, and maybe it developed life in those 5,000 years, but then it became a drought for the last 600,000 years. I always want to know where these people get these numbers from. Okay, they're studying from a distance. They have a thing that scrapes the surface of the Martian surface, and they go, oh, that's 600 million years old. Now, please tell me, where do they get these numbers? Absolutely, where on Earth do they get the number 600 million years ago? But these people would not be able to publish. They have 24 teams of scientists working at the University of Arizona to come to this conclusion. Where on Earth do they get the number 600 million years from? And it's just like, oh yeah, 600 million years. And everybody agrees with it, and they put the stamp on it, they get to publish this, and now this is the interpretation, that Mars has been dry for 600 million years. And but the problem is, it doesn't fit with the data. Once again, not giving the whole story, skillfully not including the whole story, how science lies to you every day. The real story is that Mars lost its atmosphere about in that same time period when Venus the comet came through the solar system, before it became Venus the planet. How does all this happen? Well, that's explained in my books. Just very simply, the nucleus of the comet must have been fairly large planet size, captured by the planet Jupiter, as described by the ancients. So Venus was born of Jupiter, is the story we are told of the ancients. And then Venus moved through the solar system, encountered Mars on occasion before it encountered Earth twice. The Mayans tell us that. That's why the Mayans were particularly interested in the movement of Venus. By the way, the major Mayan calendars have nothing to do with the sun or the moon or solar cycles or solstices or anything else. They simply have their basis on the cycles of the planet Venus. And so this whole idea of 2012, May 21st, is ridiculous, because the real Mayan calendar deals with the cycles of Venus. And why were they so preoccupied with Venus? Because Venus had some major encounters with Earth. From the Mayan mythology, they talk about the heart of Quetzalcoatl becoming the planet Venus. Quetzalcoatl was the plumed serpent of the night sky, who also who lit up the night sky for them. It was like the full moon; it was so bright. The Mayan calendar has nothing to do with this, and so the reality on Mars is, when you look at the pictures, and here are 24 teams of specialists, geologists, etc., looking at photos and data from Mars, making a claim that 600 million years ago there was water, but there are fresh, pristine riverbeds all over Mars. There's erosion. There's coastal erosion. There are islands. There is the big mountain, Mount Olympus on Mars, is a big volcano, and it has erosion, just like the Pacific Hawaiian Islands have erosion on the windward side. You can see those same effects. So there was a vast ocean there that was eroding away the coastline. You can see the slewing of just like in Hawaiian Islands, that where the large earthquakes dumped large deposits of soil from the mountain down into the ocean. You can see that. So here you have teams of scientists looking at these pictures with fresh, pristine erosion, water erosion going on. If it were 600 million years ago, you wouldn't see any of this. But that's what the scientists are like. They can't see the forest for the trees, or very conveniently, they don't introduce all of the data. And so they can publish. Why? Because they're tier two scientists, and this is the garbage scientist that's pawned off on the public. It costs a lot of money to maintain tier two science, but it's very important. It's a very small price to pay to keep the public stupid. And a lot of people buy this. They buy everything that NASA says. There's another story. Just a second. I have to check something here. There's another story that actually has some merit, and I want to discuss this, although it's not exactly a new story either. There's a thing called the Little Ice Age, and it lasted up into the 1800s. It started around the time the 1300s, and there are scientists who have been studying this, suggesting that this was caused by volcanoes. Now, I know for a fact, I've talked about this on my show previously, that the Little Ice Age, the Maunder Minimum, was a period in which the sun had no sunspots for a period of about 150 years. We went through such a period here recently of about 2 years. And then we come along and have the most severe winter in history last year. Now we have a very mild winter this year because the wind patterns are different. But the point is that during this Maunder Minimum, during the Middle Ages, the sun was obviously the cause of this. But there were some other things that happened at that same time. Krakatoa was one of, I believe, two or three major eruptions, volcanic eruptions around the world. And how do we know about all the data, the temperature data, etc., the cooling data? Well, we know about that because the English Navy was all over the world taking daily temperature readings. We know that there was a great deal of starvation in Northern Europe where the crops failed. They simply didn't have enough time growing food in the summer. This could happen once again, that if volcanoes kicked off around the world, the blocking of sun from hitting Earth would be enough to cause very poor growing seasons. And there would probably be mass starvation. We don't have any food stored up and as a society, as groups of societies. And even in the tropical areas, there was a cycle where they could not grow crops year-round. So there was a lot of starvation in the world, and this is well known. There were stories, for example, from Scandinavia, that the people who made bread in those days were also the people that stored the grain. They stored the grain, and then they had enough grain to make bread for the population all year long. Well, when the grain supply got low, they stopped selling bread, and there were riots. People got mad because they couldn't buy bread, but the people who had stored the grain had enough for themselves and not enough to make to sell to the public. These are well-known stories. And so there were a combination of factors, the fact that the Maunder Minimum, the number of sunspots, was reduced, so the solar output reduced, plus the same time we had volcanic eruptions on Earth, something that's apparently totally unrelated, two factors that came together at the same time. And it's interesting to see that, for example, the major Mayan developments in the New World came to an end around that time, around 1300 A.D. And there were still remnants left over when the Spanish came. They started evolving into the Aztecs, the remnants of a lot of the culture of the Aztecs. The Aztecs are somewhat like the Romans are to the Greeks. The Aztecs are to the Mayans. A different culture, but adopted a lot of the Greek mythology, a lot of the Greek concepts, a lot of the Greek knowledge was reformulated into Rome and the civilization that grew out of Rome. Likewise, in the Latin America, what we call Latin America now, the New World, the Mayans died off around 1300 AD. And remember that that group of Mayans had maintained the knowledge that was left over from thousands of years earlier, the concepts of Quetzalcoatl that you see in the major cities, Uxmal and Chichen Itza, and throughout the Mayan world, and also down into the Inca world, the same deities are revered. They're remembered in the history. So those had a tremendous effect on the cultures that developed afterwards for thousands of years, just like Christianity had an effect for thousands of years and is carried on. And whether people are Christian or not, those forces in society have left their effect around the world. A lot of other newer religions take up those same concepts. So at any rate, okay, I want to move on here. I've got a number of other topics I want to cover. Let's see. Oh, I've been covering this issue about GMO foods, genetically modified foods. Just to start with, I covered the topic that Hungary had destroyed and plowed under all Monsanto GMO cornfields in that country, and that was back in August, last August. Now an article just comes out, and this is sent to me by a listener, that in Boulder, Colorado, apparently the city of Boulder in the surrounding area has about 16,000 acres that they have under cultivation, primarily in corn, and it was primarily GMO Monsanto based seed corn. The Boulder residents got together and outlawed and got the there's called the Open Space Advisory Committee, which controls the Boulder parks, including the 16,000 acres of county owned land planted with genetically altered seeds. They got them to ban the GMOs from that area. And so no longer will they be growing GMO food. This is becoming a fight. I understand California has a big vote coming up. I announced last week that organic farmers and related associations are suing Monsanto. That story I covered last week, and more and more stories coming out that GMO food is actually toxic. A lot of the, you've heard of the concept of Roundup Ready. Roundup is a very poisonous, toxic herbicide, and it's actually linked into the genetics of corn. So the seed they call Roundup Ready corn. So the seed is compatible with Roundup, and you look at fields that have been sprayed with Roundup, only the corn grows, and the year afterwards, if they don't plant anything, nothing is growing there. You see, the most unusual thing in the middle of the summer, a field that's absolutely barren, not a thing will grow there. So they've actually poisoned the ground so that a company can profiteer and have have an exclusive right to sell seed and maintain a monopoly. Their days might be numbered here. And I just should mention, too, I feel proud that at least I was able to be part of a effort to maintain the old traditional corn. The corn project I had of a number of years ago, where I purchased the last available Dent corn seed, and which was going to be, by the way, ground up and fed to chickens just as chicken feed. And I got there before that happened. I bought all that was available and I distributed that around the world. So hopefully that seed corn will live on. And I had a small part in defeating the GMO Monsanto, Cargill, the huge companies like that, the chemical food company, so to speak, the Frankenstein Food Corporation. So I had a little bit to do with defeating them and maintaining that seed free in the world. Just a note here, the United Nations scientific body investigating the effects of radiation on Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant number 4 now claim that there is little, and there was little or no effect on the public from that nuclear power facility. And I announced in my show last week that my private information that has come to me, indicates that the west coast of the United States has very high levels of radiation, including plutonium. And so I asked that someone make a private independent investigation to verify that. But the UN scientific committee on effects of atomic radiation is called UNSCEAR. If you change one letter in that, the E is spelled UNSCEAR. If you take the E and put it at the end, it's called UNSCARE. And it sounds like their job is to unscare the public and make everybody think it's just swell. It's just amazing. And don't forget to look. There's some very excellent research out there now available that shows that the there was no major earthquake in Japan, that everybody was in their desks working. There was no 9-point major earthquake. As the tsunami rolled in, you see all the cars in the parking lot, people sitting at their desks. You see the cars neatly parked in the parking lot. You don't see any damage from a 9-point earthquake up in that northeastern sector of Japan as the tsunami rolls in. So what's very clear is that this was all a big man-made event. So at any rate, okay, I'm going to spend the last minute here just reminding you, please go to the webpage. I've got a 2-for-1 sale on the books, DVDs, CDs, all of them. You get 2-for-1 anything you purchase. And also, if you purchase over $400 total, which includes water filters or any of the other items on the page, then you'll receive the free Kato WRX 911 shortwave radio as a free gift. And so this is just a little, I think this is going to last possibly through this next week, and it's just allowing me to catch up with the incredible expenses of reprinting 3 of my books recently. At any rate, this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.